Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 2:47 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is October 21st. I thought we'd kick off with Bitcoin. It was down nearly $3,000 today, so that's a reasonably sized downside or downward dynamic. And it does beg the question. Basically, when we look at the contango that these ETFs that have just been created represent, well, it's a negative cost of carry. So you really rely on momentum to continue with for the price to appreciate. And it was one of the very few, or perhaps even the only ETF ever to have more volume on the second day than the first day. And potentially we had even more volatility today, or we had more volume in here today, and the price is down off the peak yesterday. But not all that much. From a peak of 44 to a closing value of 41, it's less than 10%. And moves of 10% or more are perhaps not all that different, not all that surprising in a Bitcoin-related instrument, other than the fact that the Bitcoin price didn't pull back by 10%. So already, even after 3 days of trading, we're getting an example of how the ETF, our futures-based ETFs, they fall more in the downside than they do rise on the upside. So I wonder how long it's going to take for, and perhaps we're already seeing examples of it, for options to build up on the put side. Because we've had a lot of options trading and volume is sizable. You can think about the $43 calls maturing in December, and there's 2,200 options available already. But as of yesterday, there wasn't an awful lot of interest in puts, but you see one day on the downside, and the $42 puts have even more volume now than the calls. So we're seeing the double side of this. I think it's more likely than not that we're going to have more puts than calls, because any day on the downside will be exaggerated relative to the Bitcoin price. Any day on the upside, it's unlikely to keep pace with the Bitcoin price. So there is likely to then be an arbitrage, because if that relationship is quantifiable, then what we're also likely to see is there'll be trading off of the options on the ETF relative to spot, or when the when we eventually get a inverted commas physically backed ETF, then that should do a better job of tracking the price, and then there'll be significant arbitrage opportunities relative to the futures backed fund. So there's going to be an awful lot of trading around these kinds of vehicles, and it's representative of a massive amount of money floating around. And we're starting to see more and more of these instances where there's just a competitive environment where we get a lot of prices moving, not necessarily because of earnings or because of geopolitical events or anything else, but rather because of expectations about how popular they're likely to be. The SPAC index did spectacularly well in the early part of this year, and then it peaked in early March, and it's been going down pretty much since. But it is starting to steady, and perhaps a good part of the reason for that is because of Digital World Acquisition Corp. They've just announced that they're going to merge with Donald Trump's media group, ostensibly set up to create a social media platform. So that SPAC is up $35 in here today. It was at 10 yesterday. It's around 45 right now, and now has a market cap somewhere in the region of 1.9 billion. Of course, doesn't have any earnings, doesn't have a product, And there's the expectation that those will happen in the future. But I think perhaps the article that Matt Levine wrote is very much on the money, that people are buying it because they are speculating that other people will want to buy it. This kind of trading activity, where earnings don't matter, well, that's emblematic of bubbly activity. And it was exactly the same in 1998 and 1999, where we had spectacular moves on the upside. When we look at this exceptional move that's occurred in Avis over the last month, where the share has doubled, and it really hasn't looked back, and it was up again in here today. Well, it's taken it now into one of the top 10 holdings of the Dow Transportation Index. So it now represents about 6.7% of the index. What I find interesting is that the index itself is bouncing pretty emphatically from the region of the trend mean. So this is a really quite impressive rebound, and companies like Norfolk Southern, Kansas City Southern, and UPS are all doing something similar. They're bouncing from the region of the trend mean. There was a lot of negativity around transportation companies because of the massive decline we've seen in FedEx. And certainly that's a major trend inconsistency. It failed to sustain the upward break in the middle of the year. It's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. The 200-day moving average has turned lower. So there is certainly the potential that FedEx is going to be the loser from Amazon entering the transportation sector. Then when we think about how has Amazon been doing, there's really a lot of news. Particularly with regard to the size of the third-party seller market within Amazon and how well those companies are doing. There was a big report released by Amazon yesterday to talk about how successful they've been, and not least because they're attracting so much negative commentary about releasing their own third-party products, which in many cases copy the products of the people that are trying to sell on the platform. So it obviously creates this stress between whether Amazon is a facilitator of trade or whether it's the trader itself. Of course, many department stores have had a similar kind of strategy for decades, so it does seem odd that Amazon is being singled out. One thing that I think is particularly relevant is this isn't the first time we've seen a failed upside break for Amazon. We had exactly the same thing at the beginning of 2020 before the pandemic. And subsequently, it was able to break out. So now it's bouncing from the region of the trend mean, and it's coming back up towards the $3,500 level. But we've had a substantial loss of momentum over the course of more than a year. So it really does need to break out and reassert on the upside. When we then think about how is the wider market performing, the S&P 500 was at a new high in here today, and incrementally so, and it's being led higher in here today by some of the more industrial and healthcare type companies. And I'm not entirely sure why it hasn't. When we think about Match.com, that's also the owner of the what's it called? The swipe left and swipe right social media dating company. So the share has certainly been doing well during the pandemic phase and has popped on the upside in here today. It has been relisted. At least this is, if this isn't the first, it's the second time the company has been reconstituted. But it is now breaking up and out of this range in here today. When we think about what's going on in China, I've highlighted about a month ago some of the companies that were less likely to go bust and looked at their bonds. And since then, the bonds have all seen their yields increase, then decrease, and they're now still have yields higher than where they were back in September. But China is basically saying that they've got it under control, and the market is taking them at their word. And I saved these two charts earlier on today, and it gives us an idea of what does China mean when they say that they have it under control. So this is the investment grade yield. So, or excuse me, the price. So prices have been trending higher for a substantial period, and over the course of the last year, they haven't really gone anywhere, but they're not breaking down. So when China says that they think that and they believe that the problem is containable, well, this is what they're referring to, that its investment grade debt really hasn't gone anywhere. There's no sign of stress there just yet. But of course, then you have high yield debt, and the high yield sector is looking very, very different. Well, obviously, we've had the collapse, and now we're starting to see a bit of a rebound. So China's betting that they can control the aftermath of at a handful of their most indebted property developers going bust. And it's increasingly likely that there will be additional defaults. China Evergrande's sales have decreased more than 90%. And then we can think about the other companies that are going to be in a similar situation. And property prices in China are contracting. And the bigger point is that the government is walking away from talking about introducing a property tax. And this is perhaps the most important point, that if China is walking away from introducing a property tax, then there is just no other way that the municipal governments can fund themselves. The only other potential alternative outside of land sales and propping up the property sector and ensuring that they have enough liquidity to buy the land, well, the only potential alternative is that the government in Beijing will have to give the municipalities more money. And there's not much appetite for that either because it would necessitate raising taxes. Or perhaps even more importantly, enforcing the kinds of taxes that many people attempt to avoid. So it is at least partially vindicating the view that, and it's the kind of view that many people in China have held for a long time. It's that occasionally they'll try and combat the inflation and the inequality represented by higher property prices, and it will have a correction for a while, and then they'll find that it's too difficult to really tackle, and it represents a buying opportunity, and then the government will look the other way as liquidity starts to flow again, and more leverage is taken on. And there's the real possibility that that's exactly what we're seeing with China right now, because if they don't introduce a property tax, well, then it means that liquidity will have to be found somewhere, and easing up on liquidity requirements would be an easy answer to that particular question. So when we think about the big question about where is the money going to come from to fund the recovery in Chinese equities, but then also to support the global economy and global speculation, because capital is both global and mobile, well, then that is suggesting at least that China may yet be part of the solution, because it certainly hasn't been so far. Now, when we think about the rest of the Chinese market, well, the Chinese renminbi has steadied up over the course of the last month. It's now testing the peaks from back in May of this year. And that's also confidence building. It's suggesting at least that the Chinese are not going to devalue their currency and that they are going to do what's necessary to ring fence the property sector. Then we can think about India. It's being held out by the West as the big alternative and is likely to get a great deal of assistance in becoming a realistic alternative to China overall. But the stock market's a little bit overbought in the short term, and it's been down 3 days in a row. So there's certainly the potential that we could have a somewhat deeper process of consolidation. But so far, this is an equal-sized reaction, particularly over the course of the last 6 months. So if this trend, as it has been over the course of the last 6 months, is going to remain consistent, then it will bounce tomorrow. If it comes back below the 18,000 level, well, then we're opening up the scope at least for a deeper pullback and consolidation, at least similar to what we saw in January, and potentially taking it back down to the region of the trend mean. We've had an incredibly steep advance up off the lows in March of this year, so it wouldn't be that surprising to see at least a couple of months where we don't get an awful lot of action. But the medium-term story in India is that we already have plenty of evidence that there's a new credit cycle underway. So that's going to help to support the market during any period of weakness, and it can certainly be viewed as a buy-the-dips kind of market. Then when we think about what's going on in Europe, well, the Euro Stoxx index continues to bounce from the region of the trend mean. The vast majority of European indices are also bouncing. There are some big questions being asked of Poland with regard to rule of law and the primacy of the domestic parliament compared to Europe. So are we approaching a point where the federal primacy law that the USA has will be enforced in Europe? And that would be a major step towards a federal, or I guess, framework for Europe overall. The Polish market isn't really pricing in any real potential for stress, and the Polish zloty is trading more or less in line with the euro, and but it is weakening. So there is at least some, I think, positioning going on with regard to the scope, at least, for the zloty to weaken as some more stress comes to bear, and as Europe attempts to try and enforce their will. So it's certain, particularly for a frontier country and one that's a big beneficiary of structural funds, well, then what happens in Poland will have a knock-on effect for the European region. We're definitely also seeing that Bund yields are starting to rise. Well, with the potential at least that a social democrat slash green government will be taking over, there's the potential for more spending. The yield now is right in the region of the peaks from back in May, and it's been what feels like an awfully long time since the yield was in positive territory. But we certainly have the sequence of higher reaction lows. There's a short-term oversold condition, but it looks like a base formation. And there's certainly the potential here that we're going to see Bund yields continuing to march higher. Inflationary pressures are certainly more acute in places like the USA than they are in Europe. And that is not least because of the monetary and fiscal measures that were taken during the pandemic. And then there are inflationary pressures also growing in a number of emerging markets. So the Brazilian market was taxed today because of the potential that they're going to spend well beyond their fiscal rule. So the real was pushing back or the dollar is pushing back up towards the upper side of its range versus the real. And the I do prefer to look at the currency adjusted performance, and the Brazilian ETF is now breaking its sequence of higher reaction lows. It really needs to bounce from that $30 area, and if the currency continues lower, then it's going to be a rather difficult thing to do. Of course, Brazil is also dealing with some issues in terms of the quality of governance, and we need to see that governance continues to improve, and that's not immediately obvious right now. So that's also weighing on the stock market. On the other hand, if things turn around, well then the continued performance, for example, of the Australian dollar or the New Zealand dollar, and the potential at least that this low around $70 or 70 cents, excuse me, is going to hold, and that we're going to see commodity related currencies do better. Now, we can also think about that the Aussie dollar was up just about every day so far this month, and it has a short-term overbought condition, and it was weaker today. But the Brazilian real has been substantially weaker overall, and commodity prices remain reasonably well bid. The London Metals Index continues to push higher. Copper prices were a little weaker yesterday, and I think investors will be paying attention, excuse me, today, will be paying attention to what happens next. If copper continues to hold the majority of the gain, because it has clearly broken the downtrend, and if it can find support somewhere in the region of the 200-day moving average, well, then that's going to be a very benign environment, and it will likely then also lend support to commodity currencies just about everywhere. I do think that this is a new commodity-led bull market, that it's being led higher by copper rather than gold, or rather than oil on this occasion. Oil prices have been resurgent. They're now right in the region of the peak from back in 2018. So it wouldn't either be all that surprising if we get a little pause in this area just to unwind short-term overbought conditions. Gold prices have already had a substantial correction and do continue to look like they're coming out of it. So the price was up just $2 or a little less than that in here today. But we are getting more of a rounding characteristic. We clearly have the triangular pattern. So when the breakout comes, it is going to be dynamic in nature. But we haven't had it quite yet. And then the gold shares are right in the region of the sequence of lower rally highs. We've had the failed downside break below 30. It's testing the sequence of lower rally highs in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is the point where we can anticipate a pause. And then if we get a higher reaction low, then that's going to be very supportive evidence that we've more than a short-term low in place. If it can break the sequence of lower rally highs and push back above the 200-day moving average, well, then that would be even better. And we might get one then the other. But it is looking increasingly likely that this is all a first step above the base. $30 was the upper side of the base formation that presided from 2013 all the way through until 2020. So we're talking about a 7-year base formation, and this just looks like a consolidation following the breakout. The first step above the base is the defining characteristic to confirm a new bull market, because it gets people used to paying higher prices, and it confirms to the doubters that higher prices can be sustained. So there's certainly a lot of argument going on right now about gold and about Bitcoin and about the SPACs and valuations, but ultimately it's about liquidity and the loss of faith in the purchasing power of currencies. So gold is the classic way of protecting oneself. I think the big challenge for the cryptocurrencies is that they haven't had to come through a cycle where governments have outlawed them or regulated them. Because what's happened in China, it's a closed system, and it's always been a closed system. And Bitcoin was primarily being used as a way of avoiding capital controls. So the big question then is, what would happen if Bitcoin is regulated? And then there's an attempt to integrate it into the wider market, and that results in more steps, or it results in slower delivery, or and how is that all going to take place in the background so that none of us are aware of exactly what's going on and we get better service for less money? Because that's where the real utility potential resides. And then how is the price going to be justified at when those kinds of services are provided? So there's a lot of questions that are outstanding about Bitcoin. We don't have nearly the same number of questions about gold, but gold doesn't have the momentum, so it's not attracting the same interest right now. But then we can think about the clear potential that there's an argument that purchasing power of currencies is going to deteriorate because we're in an inflationary environment, and Bitcoin doesn't work when governments turn off the internet. And it would be easy to talk about that when we haven't really experienced it, but lots of countries around the world have. And then this is obviously a question. And gold shares are cheap on a valuation basis. Of course, we're in an environment today where valuations don't matter, but valuations do matter. We know that. We've all lived through the tech bubble in the 1990s, when everyone thought that earnings don't matter, and eventually they matter a lot. And it really comes down to interest rate sensitivity. And the bond yields have been really firm. They remain reasonably firm. The 5-year is up another 5 basis points in here today. It has clearly broken away from the 1% level. We are not seeing any real stress in the stock market in response to that because earnings have been strong. So as long as earnings are strong, as long as the companies continue to do well, then that's likely to be beneficial for stocks. We're in the inflationary boom part of this cycle. Ultimately, central banks will have to raise interest rates, and that's when we're going to have fireworks. But we're not there yet, and it suggests that stocks have got some way to advance further because central banks are going to have difficulty raising rates. And this, I think, is going to be brought home in fits and starts. So we're still in a benign environment. There's certainly some evidence of frothy activity, and the continued advance in bond yields, then that's a growing potential threat. So it's the time to be particularly, I think, attuned to the consistency of trends overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.